Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is a summary of episode 5 on the giving of orders by Mary Parker Follet. To get the text and for more information, please go to www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Johan, speaking to you from Warwick University in the United Kingdom. As this is the first summary segment of the podcast, I'd like to say a few words before we get to the content. You may recall that we announced summaries in our Christmas message last year. Just to remind, summaries are brief episodes aimed at our time-strapped listeners, where I will introduce the topic of the main episode and tell you what were the key points covered in the discussion by Randolph, Dimitris, Miranda and Pedro, as well as any of the guests we may have had. The idea is that the summary segments will provide an overview of the main episode so you can decide whether you want to go back and listen to the full conversation. To make this easier, we have inserted the time segments where a topic was discussed, so you can refer back to the episode and easily find the segment that you're looking for. But we also intend the summaries to be a fully standalone piece of material which you can read and listen to without having to resort to any of the other material. On behalf of the entire Talking About Organizations team, I hope you will enjoy these new segments and encourage you to get in touch with us via the regular channels with constructive feedback. Mary Parker Follet, born September 3rd, 1868 and died December 18th, 1933, was an American social worker, management consultant and philosopher who did trailblazing work in the field of organizational theory and organizational behavior. This episode reviewed one of Follet's lectures, The Giving of Orders, contained in a collection of lectures and writings assembled by L. Erwick at the end of her life in an effort to preserve her ideas for the future. Follet believed that exploring the science of the situation involved both management and workers studying the situation together. In many ways, Follet was ahead of her time in emphasizing the need for systems thinking, understanding the context and not only the individual, and espousing the belief that workers should have a much more prominent voice. Follet identified the importance of cross-organizational processes within hierarchical organizations, which was an important development supporting matrix-style organizations such as DuPont in the 1920s. She advocated non-coercive power-sharing in the workplace. She coined the term win-win in conflict resolution and believed organizations would benefit from embracing conflict as a means of achieving diversity and integrated solutions rather than merely compromising. Follet viewed organizations as networks rather than as hierarchical structures and paid special attention to the influence of relations within the groups. In the text for the podcast, The Giving of Orders, Follet revealed a pragmatist approach to management. The text is very much an invitation for managers and leaders to take a responsible attitude towards experience, depersonalize orders through identifying and obeying the law of the situation, and balancing supervision with worker autonomy. Follet disagreed with management ideas in vogue in her time that reduced managers to giving orders and viewed workers as individuals, not social beings. She was strongly against what was known back then as personality studies, that is, reduction idea that individuals act according to enduring trait in a stimulus-response fashion, which today is found in ideas like neurobiology and applied to entrepreneurship and most cognitive science management. Rather, Follet viewed workers as much more complex creatures that develop habits and behavioral patterns via experience and react and adapt to their context. In the discussion, we have debated her key ideas, context in the history of management and organizational study, and the contemporary value of her text. The talk started with a consideration of its difference from the mainstream management ideas, including the authors we have covered earlier in the podcast, such as Taylor and Fayol. In particular, Follet insists in the text on adopting a reflective position. She explicitly comments her call is not to leaders to follow her assumptions and ideas, but that they reflect on the principle and become aware how these guide their behavior. This conscious attitude, or even as some of us called it, a philosophical attitude, is very distant from the implicit one-size-fits-all general approach to management. Just consider how case studies usually assume that there is a solution. In studying her approach to management, we discover that she presents an alternative to the emphasis on top-down control of most early approaches to management, such as scientific management. She takes the action of giving orders, which is usually framed as a matter of simple authority. Managers give orders and people follow it, and reframes this as knowledge transfer. The main idea is that instead of blindly obeying top-down commands, orders should be based on the law of the situation. People should be oriented so that it would be natural for them to perform a task because it seems the most appropriate in action in the context or situation. She highlights the view of leadership based on power with rather than power over. This approach placed her as a radical position when confronted with most of management canon and as a pioneer on many ideas and techniques that became common in modern times, though many of her ideas remained unknown within the management community for a long time. The first radical idea identified by us was the attention to learning and improvement of one's ability as a manager. He posits that managers should not only be reflective on their work, but also take an experimental stance. That is, compare ideas, observe and poll results and discuss. This is much more in line with more modern views of organizational ideas, such as continual improvement by reflection and measuring of results, attention to feedback in the workplace, and modern views on organizational learning as a cycle of change. As the conversation progressed, we diverged on the applicability of her views. Some felt that, though interesting, the whole idea of the law of the situation was a bit vague. Some of us asked, what is the situation? Does it give you a clear guidance on how to act? Others took a more matter-of-fact approach and initially thought that it was made by all that influences on one's work, similar to the elements management has influence over, such as hierarchy, norms, interdependence across tasks, etc. Yet, some others were not so puzzled by what concerned a situation or how to define it, but felt that it reflected some native idea on the nature of workplaces. This is because her emphasis on the situation risks assuming there are no disagreements when people are exposed to the same context or situation. The problem is not how hard it is to identify a situation, it is that people do not get to the same conclusion from it. Reflecting on these limitations, we agree that perhaps Foley is concerned with encouraging managers to integrate perspectives, to build a certain orientation within a situation, and to jointly guide workers to discover a map of their context and make decisions based on that. We then explored examples from their research and practitioner experience to flesh out this notion of the law of the situation, and how Foley's ideas might apply in practice. One example was shared from a research in product development at how project managers placed in a metrics department worked carefully to construct consensus on certain decisions and initiatives, given their position of limited authority over fellow functional managers. This shows that the whole idea of the situation is indeed elusive because it is something that needs to be constructed by management while bringing people to the same understanding. Another example came from direct work experience in the military. Unlike stereotypical ideas of this work context, it seemed that blind obedience will only get you so far. Though it is true that the military re-socialized people to lower their resistance to orders, this serves to get people to perform efficiently in operational tasks such as respecting rules and so on. But in complex activities, as when people need to perform a difficult procedure, you do not only need compliance, you need people to be aware of the situation and respond accordingly. The problem is that in the military context, similar to how large and complex business organizations such as a multinational company, employees have limited understanding of the whole environment in which their actions fit, not least because not all the information can be shared with all ranks, and managers may not have the material time to fill in employees in the whole context surrounding their tasks. While considering the applicability of Foley's idea to various contexts, we realized that she advances a different view of employees and humans in general, quite distant from most classics anyway, such as Taylor and Fayol. She has a much more respectful stance towards workers and taking them as worthy listeners and acknowledging their knowledgeability of matters at hand. This is quite different from someone like Taylor or even Weber, who we'll discuss in the next podcast, who see employees as lazy and in need of guidance and discipline. Indeed, in stark contrast with Taylor, following things are not obeying orders is natural part of human nature, which shows why integrating reviews and engaging in a more participative process is so important. We agree that Follet was a pioneer of ideas of participative organization forms, distributed leadership, and generally a more horizontal spirit in the workplace. She is clearly also an important influence to the human relations movement, to be discussed later in the podcast in the Mayo episode. All of this is linked to the current management approaches, such as the view of managers as coaches and facilitators, instead of a command and control function, which can be illustrated by the popularity of teams today and by the many task management methodologies, such as Agile, which reconfigure the role of management. At this point, we wondered to the extent these participative forms fit specific industries. Perhaps they appear particularly contemporary because they fit in well with the knowledge work environment. In these places, employees are expected to be creative, to apply their expertise, and there are limits to the extent management can directly tell a worker what to do. Conversely, we cannot deny that compliance is still important in the workplace, even in knowledge-intensive firms, so there are limits for discretions. For example, technological organizations such as shipbuilders and designers clearly need to maintain standards in product development. You need to use standards as multiple groups depend on work outputs. Also, through valuing them, managers may not be able to take up suggestions from workers due to time pressure or internal organizational rules. Discussion then unfolded around how much Follet seems to be aware of that. And here we discuss the common core that she shares with Taylor and other theorists, which is the value she attributes to impersonal control, which she calls depersonalizing orders. The whole emphasis on the law of the situation appears less than fussy warm idea, and more as a way to achieve normative control. This reflects ordinary surveillance techniques at work discussed in previous episodes. In the Fayol episode, we discuss how managers achieve control by CCTV or email monitoring, and theoretical ideas reminiscent of Marx. Conditions of production determine the attitude of workers. Finally, when considering some shortcomings, podcasters pointed out that Follett text is at times too generic. Ideas are thought-provoking, but examples are rare and usually based on daily situations. There is little about formal organizations. Even the general insight we had that most ideas apply to knowledge work context is not discussed by Follett. In the second part of our episode, we looked at on what precisely Follett based her assumptions. She seems to be following an almost Marxist way of thinking by saying that situations are dependent on material conditions. How then do you facilitate the similarity between the perceptions of situations? You can alter material conditions, such as clothing and resources. You can also use training, having supervisors and employees go through relatable experience. Ralph commented that the situation is constructed and backs that with a quote. Situation ought to be seen differently and interpreted differently on page 34. We know from organizational theory that an organization consists of things such as their chain of command, the surrounding, and the different socializations its members have. We can also look at who responds to what stimulus, who's based where, and what the surroundings of the organization are. Doing this, we can see how Follett covers these different views in her examples of situations, and we conclude that she seems to view them as a building block of organizations. In a strand of thinking that would end up being revisited as researchers grapple with organizational change, Follett takes these situations as the essential component of what makes an organization. Her descriptions of situations also seem to hinge on management's and employees' goals aligning. We were led to assume that her thinking is unitarist and that she's trying to get the entire organization to root around a common goal. Pedro interjected, what if there is negotiation? And Follett's answer is that it is socially determined what happens. Furthermore, Follett outlines how a united organization does not need elaborative hierarchies to maintain structure. Integrated systems are flatter, and we wondered whether We are looking for the tools to make integration happen here. Maybe this is one of the keys to the text. In this context, we are also depersonalizing organizations, as orders are made as a uniting force rather than a controlling one. This might be an attempt to remove embarrassment of carrying out duties that are necessary, or a scheme to remove the personality of workers. We are not quite sure. Maybe it's doing all of those things, even. This has all made us wonder where the conflict has gone. Surely it cannot be as smooth as it's described in this version of history, where you just say something and the workers end up doing it. What happens when we expose a conflict that is already existing? And what happens if we cause one by giving out these orders? What exactly is a unifying purpose, Oscar Miranda? It seems to be a rather future mission from the text, given how essential it is to avoid diverging interest. Today's corporations, which try to make their employees identify with the company mission, are dealing with these unresolved issues in the daily practice. And maybe that is where we should look for a contrasting perspective. We speculate that the UID focus on unity might be an attempt to pacify managers' dealings with the workers, which back then could otherwise be quite hostile. Follet writes, people do not like to be ordered, even to take a holiday, on page 36. And Ralph recounts how he once visited a shipyard and what the accountants there told him. For a month in the summer, the yard closes down and everyone is offered paid leave. Some people, however, take unpaid leave, foregoing the benefit of salary in defiance of the system. If things were indeed as simple as Fuller described them, her cautions would hardly be necessary. Thus, we suspect that she is well aware of what actually goes on. As an example of that, Ralph recounted how he used to give orders in the military. Rather than just handing over precise instructions, he would ask a subordinate how they would approach the problem at hand. Sometimes they would say that it was impossible, and thus they were done. Ralph would then ask them what they could do anyway, and see if they could not make some headway together. Such behaviour actually ended up irritating some of the fellow officers, who consider it to be below their rank to discuss with privates what to do. Many managers find it to be cognitively simpler to just hand down non-negotiable instructions, as it absolves them of the need to frame the request as a series of outcomes and actually think of how the other person perceives the message. There is also a going assumption that low-level employees are cognitively limited and explaining things to them is thus a waste. Here Dimitris provides an apt example of undergraduates. Contrary to many other workers, their intellect is supposed to grow eventually, and Dimitris put them to test by asking them to analyze a counter's economy. Panic ensued as pacifying guide wheels were yanked away and students grappled with the uncertainty and freedom. Pressure mounted and some became angry at what they perceived to be an outright dishonesty and injustice, as they were not told the rules of the game. But they came through and appreciated the feeling of accomplishment they had from making something their own. If we think of orders as assuming responsibility, then we can see how one can be simultaneously stressed out from and appreciative of being given the goal rather than the method. If one is simply told what to do, they are merely expected to do it, whereas if one is given a goal, one answers for the method. Follet is in tune with this kind of thinking and even says that if an order goes against the understood purpose, the employee is justified in resenting it. He stops short of saying that an employee is justified in outright disobeying, but asks if workers should not manage themselves a bit more. This nugget would eventually become standard HR practice, as managers and others would see themselves as coaches for the employees rather than controllers. We can see how this thinking moved away from being mechanic and toward a more human approach, and how people use these ideas to grapple with knowledge-intense work. Follet emphasized psychology and had a very phenomenological approach, and it shows. What we found lacking, though, was a recognition that organizations are set in the ways, and it is often the act of challenging the method, rather than the method itself, that causes discontent. This is especially true if one takes over the outcome, but is still evaluated according to the ability to follow instructions. In military and academia, one is often strictly assessed, and any failure will be heavily penalized, favoring current best practice as it shields one from blame. It also works the other way, as in the NHS. Recently, more rules have been introduced, along with more metrics, and that has caused a similar disquiet over changing conditions. Even with this omission, however, we found the text to be an interesting insight into how different the environment was for managers and workers 100 years ago. Something like Henry Ford's compliance department that would spy on employees and sometimes even raid their houses to remove immoral items would not be accepted in many places today. This was Demeter's takeaway, being responsible and conscious, being mindful of how early 20th century managers go about their work. Ultimately, Foley says that hers are just suggestions and she is not saying how to run one's organization. But they are suggestions that should be listened to, as managers need employees on their side if they are to actually think, and that's even if it makes you uncomfortable. Make what you have to say mean something, she writes on page 42. And that is what the discussion on the giving up of orders by Mary Parker Foley was about. Thank you for listening, and I hope that my summary motivated you enough to go and listen to the full episode if you haven't yet. If you enjoy this segment and generally like the podcast, please get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or via our website. Also, we would be grateful if you could leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends and co-workers about us. We hope to see you next week for episode 6 of Bureaucracy by Max Weber, here on Talking About Organizations.